I'm Matthew Petty, and this is Intersection. Ibrahim Tadashev was killed last May in Orlando while being questioned by the FBI about his connection to one of the suspects in the Boston Marathon bombing. State Attorney Jeff Ashton began an investigation into the fatal shooting of Tadashev. His report on that investigation is out this week. To talk more about the FBI's investigation of Ibrahim Tadashev, 90.7's Carmel Del Shad spoke with WBUR Boston senior reporter David Boeri. But first, members of the film industry are lobbying the state legislature for tax incentives to lure production companies that make TV shows, movies and video games to do business in the state of Florida. I'll speak to a panel of experts about the potential impact these incentives could have on the film industry here in Central Florida. That's ahead on Intersection. I'm joined by John Lux. John is the Chief Operating Officer at Ideas. Thank you very much for coming in, John.
Thanks for having me.
And joining us also in the studio is Dave Franco. He's the Vice President of Academic Affairs at Full Sail University. Dave, thank you for coming in.
So glad to be here.
I'm also joined by Sheena Fowler. Sheena is the Orlando Film Commissioner at Metro Orlando EDC. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Well, first of all, a bill that would increase the amount of tax incentives handed out to film and television productions that operate out of Florida and hire Florida workers is wending its way through the state legislature. John, I want to start by asking you, how much would this bill dish out to film and television productions?
Right now, there are two bills up in Tallahassee. There is one on the House side and one on the Senate side. There are a lot of similarities, but there are also some differences. The House side right now has $200 million in tax credits. The Senate side has $50 million in tax credits. So it'll go through the process, and somewhere, hopefully, in there is where it'll land in the end.
Probably no amount of money is ever going to be enough, but what are you shooting for?
Well, you're right. The past has shown that the ROI that comes back stays the same whether it's a small amount or whether it's a large amount. So it has a great return on projects coming in, and it has a great return on the GDP of the state, whether it ends up being the $50 million on the Senate side or the $200 million on the House side, or even if it happened to be, you know, $500 million in a year. The ROI goes up exponentially the same way the tax credits do. So we're hoping for the best we can possibly get.
So there was an incentive package already. What happened to that? Didn't quite last as long as it should have?
Right. Originally, it came into play in 2010, and the following year, it was some additional funding went into it and an extra year. So it ended up being 6 years for $296 million, which was a great number. The even better news was that it was so popular, it got used up in about 3 years. So we still had a window of about 3 years, which is now about 2 years, but there's no tax credits available to it. So the good news is it was really popular, and the $296 million led to over $1 billion of spending on projects within the state here, 160,000 positions for workers in the state on those projects. That's the good news. The bad news is it left the pot empty, and so that's what this effort is about, is saying it was so popular, we need more, and hopefully that plays out over the next, you know, month or so in the legislative session.
Do you think lawmakers look at these incentives and see a kind of a long-term return? Because when you talk about 160,000 worker positions, we're looking at sort of short-term positions specific to each project, right?
In some cases, yes. In some cases, no. That is one of the interesting things about our industry, is that some projects do last. You know, some of those 160,000 are 1- and 2-day jobs. But there are also a lot of those that are 3-4 month jobs on some of the high impact stuff. In a perfect situation, you say you have a couple of TV series or a couple of larger films. They could work for a couple of months on one, and then they go from one to the next one and then to the next one. And next thing you know, a year's gone by and those people have worked 10, 11 months out of the year. And that's the perfect scenario. On the gaming and digital media side, there are a lot of full-time salaried positions within that 160,000. So the industry itself, whether it be television, film, commercials, gaming, it runs the gamut, and the positions, the perfect scenario is we have enough funding to bring in enough projects that do keep people working on an ongoing, long-term basis.
Mm-hmm. Sheena, I want to turn to you now. The last round of tax incentives brought some big productions to Florida. John was talking about Burn Notice there, and we just talked about the Glades as well. But what would an incentive program like the one that's in the works in Tallahassee at the moment, what would that do for Central Florida?
Well, we, as a film commissioner here, it's part of my job to market the region as a premier filming destination and location for production, from pre-production to post-production. So it really is a tool that I can use in talking to producers and studios in order to get them here into the region. I have actually lost projects when I've been courting them here, and that's one of the first things that they want to talk about. They want to know what the incentive is. Several years ago, that's not how the game worked. It was about locations and crew, and Florida was in the top catalog for that. It was exactly where productions wanted to be. We have a variety of locations, great weather, and a deep crew base and talent pool. That's where they needed to come. Now they need that on top of an incentive. And when you have a neighbor like Georgia and not too far Louisiana that have an uncapped program, it's very difficult to talk to a producer and say, you should spend your money in our state, when they're going to give you uncapped on 30% of their budget.
Why do you think it is that other states are able to offer more attractive incentives than Florida? I mean, Florida's a big state. There is a pretty big surplus this year. It seems like it would be a good time to be thinking about putting some of that money back into film.
Right. And certainly Florida's legislature is and our budget for the state is fashioned different than some of the other states with no state income tax. That obviously is a great deal of money that isn't in the coffer for the budget to work with. And that does, when we're creating these jobs, that money isn't going directly back into the budget for the state of Florida. It's going back into the state, but not directly into their budget. So other states are able to reap some of those benefits for every job that they create.
Do you think this program, if it comes through, the money there, would it equally divvy up the money throughout Florida? How would that be worked out?
You know, traditionally, the two largest production centers in the state of Florida are Miami and Orlando. We have a great deal of production that takes place in a lot of other regions in the state. And depending on, you know, which bill, and we'll see how it goes through the legislative process, there are options to get into those underutilized areas. And my region that I cover has several underutilized counties as well. Orange County is the only one that's not underutilized. So we do keep that in account to make sure that these projects do have an extra incentive to go into a community that may not have as many crew and infrastructure base there. So it ultimately, the program, you have to qualify, meet the minimum benefits, and then you come in the order in which the project or the application is received. And that's how the projects will be divvied out.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. I'm speaking to John Lux, Chief Operating Officer of IDEAS, Sheena Fowler, Orlando Film Commissioner at Metro Orlando EDC, and David Franco, Vice President of Academic Affairs at Full Sail University. You can join the conversation online on Facebook or Twitter. You can also send us an email, intersection@wmfe.org. Dave Franco, I want to turn to you now. Full Sail has been providing education in the field of film production for some time now. What's in it for Full Sail? How much is riding on whether these incentives come through or not?
Well, I think a big part of the incentive program, or how it relates even to academics or young filmmakers, is going into that field, number one, the interest of it, and trying to keep some of those graduates here in Florida. That's always been a big problem for many of the schools in Florida, because students, when they graduate, will go to some of these states, as Sheena stated, and go out. I remember in the late 80s, early 90s, the whole area could outfit a few feature films at the same time. Now, those crews or those people and those graduates who will bring that money back to Florida after they graduate, stay here, contribute to the area instead of going somewhere else. A lot of these young filmmakers do pretty well right out of school in many cases, but they leave the area, they leave the state, and they spend their money and hire their crews out of state.
Mm-hmm. Is there an element of competition within the state too? Like, how much of that do you think shifted to South Florida, just, you know, thinking about some of those TV series which are now shot down there?
Well, there are different, as Sheena stated too, there are different areas that attract a lot more. But there's fantastic locations here in the state for those companies to use and look at. It's I almost look at it as we're one big happy family in the state of Florida. So any production coming to the state is good for everyone. So I kind of don't look at that. But obviously the southern part of the state does the best in the state of Florida.
And if I may, a win for Florida really is a win for everyone. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of crew that will travel to South Florida to work there. John's been the recipient of projects that have worked in Clearwater, that worked in Miami, doing ADR work in his studios here in Orlando. So we really do, like Dave said, we work together as a state. Just because it's headquartered in one part of the state doesn't mean that the rest of the state isn't going to get part of that job. Mm-hmm.
Dave, who's going into bat for you in Tallahassee? Who do you have the ear of? Like local lawmakers, are they on board with the idea of film incentives?
Well, we have a lot of representatives who back and understand really the ROI that comes back to Florida. The numbers speak for themselves. It's pretty easy to see what this incentive is capable of doing and the money that it will create here in the state. Many of those people, it depends what really what their agenda is, what is their top priority, and what do they want to back. I'll kind of throw that over to Sheena too. She has a lot more information than that.
I'm going to bat in Tallahassee, mm-hmm. and part of that effort, a lot of us are spending personal time going up there. And next week is Florida's Rally in Tally, an organization that all of us are part of. Is Film Florida, and it's a statewide organization that encompasses everything from education, infrastructure, film commissions, and everything in between. And we work as a state to have one united voice. And as that united voice, we're going up and working with our legislators to make sure that they're educated, because it's an industry that we're inundated with, but we don't always understand. I was just talking to someone, and my office is part of the Metro Orlando Economic Development Commission, speaking to a board member, and he didn't quite know what digital media actually meant. And we were discussing all of the different companies that are located here in Central Florida that are under that digital media umbrella. He, assumed it was just a few, and he had no idea how many vast companies that we have here. So we really need to educate our legislators so that they understand that this is not just a transient industry. There's people that have families, and actually most of the industry, you think that it's glamorous and it's fast and it's quick. At the end of the day, this is people who have families. They go to work just like anybody else, and this is what they want to do for a living. This is how they've been trained. Some of them went to local schools. They were trained here. I'm a good example. I graduated from Full Sail, and I found a job here, and I stayed here. That was not my intention, but the work was here, so I stayed. And now I'm raising a family here in Central Florida. That's what a lot of this industry does, whether it's gaming or whether it's traditional production. There's families that want to live here, raise their family here, pay their taxes here, and be positive citizens in the state of Florida. And that's what we're trying to spread. In addition to all the economic impacts that this program has, it really is about jobs. It's about putting people to work. And that's what we're educating people in Tallahassee.
Just tell me a little more about Rally in Tally. What day is that?
It's March 26th. And we actually have buses coming up from Miami and from Orlando. And our Tampa family will be coming in to the Orlando market. And we'll be busing up on the 25th. Everybody will be spending the night and waking up bright and early to have meetings and walking the halls all day on the 26th. And we are having a reception that is sponsored by Ray Winkle Vasalinda. So we're very thankful for her for putting that together with Senator Dietert. And Manny Diaz is our sponsor for the House bill as well. And so we're very thankful for the sponsors who've brought this, the House bill and the Senate bill, forward. And they've been supporting us in our effort. And we've got quite a few people. I think the last time I checked, we have about 160 folks coming with us to Tallahassee to personally walk the halls. And that's just our physical effort. And they're busing up on Pegasus Transportation. I have to give a great thanks to them for being so supportive of this effort. John has been instrumental in running our social media campaign. So we have the hashtag #EntertainThis. And that has been a big part of those who cannot participate physically in Tallahassee. Recently, we had a meeting for Women in Film and Television Florida, which is an association here at John's office at Ideas. And we recorded a lot of testimonials, quick 30-second testimonials on how this incentive affects you. And that's been a great way to show and educate that there are a variety of different jobs in this industry. Mm-hmm. There's a variety of different stakes that people have in this industry, and it affects us each in a different way. But it's important to note that it affects us all.
You mentioned before, though, too, that there are other organizations and other causes trying to get the ear of lawmakers. It's going to be pretty sort of noisy and chaotic.
Absolutely.
I mean, just in a kind of metaphysical sense, to try and make sure that your message gets through, right? So are you confident that something will happen and you will get some incentives down the track?
You know, I am confident. We are leaps and bounds ahead of where we were last year. We didn't get this far with having a House bill and a Senate bill. And I have to say that is in part, or mostly in part, to our sponsors. Senator Dietert has been instrumental in singing our cause in Tallahassee, and Manny Diaz putting this bill forward. It's impressive to have so many co-sponsors, and if I had time, I'd name them all, for the House bill. It's impressive to see that there are legislators who have paid attention. They've learned about this industry. They see the value in this industry, and they want to support it because we came forward with a valid plan that's conservative and benefits the state.
Mm-hmm. John, what are your thoughts? Are you confident after spending all this time, sinking all this time and effort into this cause? Do you think you'll see some payoff?
I believe so. When I started this specific effort with Sheena back in the fall, my first quest was just to get as many meetings with legislators as possible. And in a six-month period, I met with more than 15, whether it be representatives or senators or legislative aides. And some came to our building at Ideas, and others, I went to them, and others were just on the phone. And my biggest quest was to educate, because they have so much information thrown at them all the time. I just wanted to boil it down to three bullet points. This is what they are. Please help. Please support. And you know, myself and a lot of other people have done the same thing. I'm cautiously optimistic that things are going to play out over the next period of time positively. I think we have great momentum going. We have a lot of people going up to Tallahassee for Rally and Tally. The social media campaign has been tremendous. So I'm cautiously optimistic, and I'm just going to keep educating as best as I can, and we hope for the best.
Mm-hmm. And Dave, are you confident that there will be an incentives package by the end of the legislative session?
I'm feeling very good about it. And as Sheena stated too, that we're much farther than we were last year at this time. I mean, there are a lot of fantastic organizations throughout the state of Florida getting together, going up on March 26th up to Tallahassee for the Rally and Tally. Film Florida did a great job as well, wrangling many representatives. They went on a state tour where they brought in 18 to 20 plus representatives each time in various of the in the major cities, where people came in and just took questions. And that, I think, helped in a major way in really getting the word out and the importance of this incentive. So I'm feeling very confident. I'm not confident on the amount, but I'm confident that there will be an incentive.
Mm-hmm. I've been speaking to Dave Franco. He's the Vice President of Academic Affairs at Full Sail University. Dave, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you so much.
We've been speaking to John Lux, who's the Chief Operating Officer at Ideas. John, thank you for coming in.
My pleasure. Thanks.
And joining us also, Sheena Fowler. Sheena is the Orlando Film Commissioner for Metro Orlando Film Commission. Sheena, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Up next, 90.7's Carmel Del Shad speaks with WBUR Boston senior reporter David Boeri about the FBI's interrogation last May of Ibrahim Tadashev in Orlando and how it led to Tadashev's fatal shooting.
I'm joined by David Boeri. David is the senior reporter at NPR member station WBUR in Boston and has been following the story since the marathon bombing last April. David, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
So you've been following the story since the beginning. Did you ever expect it to come to this point? Car chases, multiple states, deportation of connected individuals?
It has evolved in a very strange way. And the one thing I didn't expect at the start was that we would be 10 months into it before we ever had any kind of information. And that's to say that we, in fact, are going to get some information soon from the FBI, because they still have made nothing but an initial statement. And that was simply that a violent confrontation was initiated and one of their agents shot and killed that person. That has been pretty much all we've known in the last 10 months.
Right, and that statement was released at the end of May 2013, and they've been silent since then.
That's right. So what's happened is that there have been all these conflicting and contradictory and anonymous explanations of what happened.
And a few weeks after the bombing, the 27-year-old Ibrahim Tadashev was brought into the picture, and it widened the scope of your reporting, I imagine. Once they started moving and the FBI started moving on this lead and connection to the triple homicide, how did you cover that?
Actually, what happened here was that Tadashev came on their radar because he had gotten a phone call in March from Tamerlan Tsarnaev, who is the prime suspect of the two brothers involved who are accused of setting off the bombs on Marathon Day. Tsarnaev and Tadashev were both ultimate fighters. They trained in the same gym in Boston. That's how they got to know each other. And when Tadashev was living here in Orlando, he had knee surgery. That brought a phone call to see how he was doing from Tamerlan Tsarnaev. That was in March. And within a day or two of the discovery that it was the Tsarnaevs that they were looking for in Boston, FBI agents descended on his house here in Orlando. And they started examining him. He was investigated by the Joint Terrorism Task Force. They wanted to find out if anybody else was conspiring or had been conspiring with the Tsarnaevs in that bombing. So they were not looking at Tadashev as somebody involved in that triple homicide in 2011 on September 11th, the 10th anniversary of 9/11 in Waltham, Massachusetts, until after about a month. Tadashev was about to leave on a trip to Chechnya. And at that point, an FBI agent from Boston came down along with two Massachusetts State Police troopers, and they wanted to interview him. That was May 21st. That interview started at 7:30 in his condominium, and it ended catastrophically at about 12:30 in the morning on May 22nd when he was shot to death.
So as you were reporting and reading the official reports from the FBI, whatever information they were releasing, did anything strike you as unusual about how they went around this investigation?
Well, first of all, it was the surprise that suddenly after a month in which the FBI – now remember, these are state crimes in Massachusetts. This is not – and the FBI will tell you they're not murder police. The FBI was investigating Tadashev in connection to the Marathon Day bombings and terrorism incidents involving that. And so suddenly it takes this sharp turn on the very last interview that he has with the FBI down there. Tadashev had been talking with the FBI. He had been in the Orlando office. They had been out to see him maybe five times. And then here was the last meeting, and suddenly the questions shifted to Waltham, 2011, and this grisly triple homicide there. It was at that point, and by the way, Tadashev had said to the FBI agent, the lead agent here in Orlando who's handling him, "I don't want to come in. You're welcome to come to the condominium, but I don't want to go to see you to be questioned. You can come to me." They did. What's really puzzling and begs for lots of questions here is that they stayed in his own house for 5 hours. And remember, what we know about Ibrahim Tadashev is that he has a history of assaultive behavior. He has a hair-trigger temper. He's involved with the law already, and he's a martial arts fighter. His hands are lethal. His feet are lethal. They're in his own place where he, not they, know where the weapons are, if there are any weapons. And instead of taking him to a secure facility, to an FBI office or to a police station to interview him, they interview him at the place where he's most comfortable. After 5 intense hours, that's when he is said to have, according to sources, gone crazy and to have attacked the FBI agent, and the FBI agent shot him.
So the FBI is conducting its own report, but we're pushing on 10 months now since he was shot and killed. Why do you think it's taking so long for them to release it? Because they're not even commenting on anything in the meantime.
Well, this is what's so puzzling, why it's taken so long. Because consider the scene of the shooting. It's a 15 by 20 foot room. We know that there are only 7 shell casings recovered, which suggests there were 7 shots fired. They're only shot from the FBI agent's gun. Tadashev does not have a firearm. There are only the agent and 2 Massachusetts state troopers who are in the room. So in terms of an investigation, there are 3, maybe 4 people to talk to, a small room, you have the autopsy, you only have 7 shell casings, you can do ballistics. This is something, and standard police chiefs call for shooting incident reviews to be released normally between 60 and 90 days. Well, this is well past 270 days. It's 10 months. Why did it take so long? It doesn't make a whole lot of sense why this took so long.
And Florida State Attorney Jeff Ashton's report is the only independent report that's coming out so far about the incident. Why do you think that is?
To be clear, the FBI launches a shooting incident investigation, and then the Department of Justice, under which the FBI operates, has the Civil Rights Division, and the case goes to the Civil Rights Division for review, and that's because somebody is shot. The possibility is that person, in being shot, might have been deprived of their rights if it's a wrongful shooting. So there's a report from the FBI. There's a report from the Civil Rights Division that we're awaiting. And, of course, the state attorney here chose to conduct his own investigation. There's lots of curiosity about what he's going to have in his report and whether or not, in fact, he did what you would call an independent investigation, truly independent, whether, in fact, he was allowed to – he had investigators who did independent work from the FBI, because the FBI generally investigates itself.
Where do you think the story is going to go from here? Do you think it ends?
Well, it's clearly not going to end with the reports, because as we know from Tadashev and Tadashev's family, they are looking to sue the government for a wrongful death. And part of their argument has been, I think we've already seen it, is that even if he in fact took action that the FBI agent saw as threatening his life, that he was put into a situation, he was pressured into a situation because of the circumstances, because the attorneys will argue and have already suggested he was deprived of his rights, that he wasn't provided Miranda warnings, that he wasn't provided with a lawyer, that he was kept pressured to be in his condominium. That will be their argument. So this isn't over. There will definitely be a wrongful death suit.
I've been speaking with David Boeri, senior reporter at NPR member station WBUR in Boston. David, thanks for speaking with me.
You're welcome.
That was 90.7's Carmel Del Shad speaking with WBUR Boston senior reporter David Boeri. The conversation about what's happening in Florida continues online at wmfe.org/intersection. There you can also sign up for our weekly podcast. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners. Brendan Byrne is assistant producer. I'm Matthew Petty. Thanks for listening.